Power Spot VOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Brian Lynn reports on the decreasing population of Canadian polar bears. Faith Perlow answers a question about the difference between the words veggie, vegetarian, and vegan. Later, we listen to The Ransom of Red Chief by O. Henry. But first,
a new report suggests Canada's Western Hudson Bay polar bear population has dropped 27% during the past 5 years. Every autumn, bears living along the western edge of the Hudson Bay pass through the subarctic town of Churchill, Manitoba. The yearly movement has helped make the area's bears one of the most studied groups in the world. Bear watching adds about 5.3 million to the local economy each year. But a report recently issued by the government in Canada's Northern Territory of Nunavut found that just 618 polar bears remained in the area in 2021. This represented a 50% drop in the population from the 1980s. Polar bears depend on frozen salt water, called sea ice, to help them hunt seals for food. But the Arctic is now warming about 4 times faster than the rest of the world. Around Hudson Bay, seasonal sea ice is melting earlier in the spring and forming later in the fall. This is forcing bears to go longer periods without food. John Whiteman is chief research scientist at the nonprofit conservation group Polar Bears International. Speaking to Reuters news agency, he called the population drop totally shocking. Whiteman said scientists fear that if continued sea ice loss cannot be stopped, it will one day lead to a total loss of the area's polar bear population. Scientists warned that a direct link between the population drop and sea ice loss in Hudson Bay is not fully clear. This is because 4 of the past 5 years have seen reasonably good ice conditions. Experts say climate-caused changes affecting the local sea population might also be driving polar bear numbers down. Scientists are also concerned because the rate of population decline has sped up in recent years. Between 2011 and 2016, for example, the polar bear population dropped just 11%. There are 19 populations of polar bears spread out among Russia, Alaska, Norway, Greenland, and Canada. But Western Hudson Bay is one of the southernmost populations. Scientists predict the bears there are likely to become among the first to disappear. A 2021 study in the journal Nature Climate Change found most of the world's polar bear populations are in danger of collapsing by 2100 if worldwide carbon emissions are not heavily reduced. Researchers said the number of deaths in young bears and female bears in western Hudson Bay is worrisome. Those are the types of bears we've always predicted would be affected by changes in the environment, said Stephen Atkinson. He was a lead writer of the government report and has studied polar bear populations for more than 30 years. Young bears need energy to grow and cannot survive long periods without enough food. Female bears struggle because they use up a lot of energy caring for young bears. Atkinson said the ability of polar bears in the western Hudson Bay to reproduce will decrease because you simply have fewer young bears that survive and become adults. I'm Brian Lynn.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between three words, veggie, vegetarian, and vegan. Hi, VOA team, and happy holidays. I am wondering if you could help me clarify the difference between vegan, vegetarian, and veggie. When can we use them? Or are they interchangeable? Thank you, Nora. Dear Nora, as we start the new year, many of us are thinking about ways to be healthier. This is a great question to begin our 2023 series of Ask a Teacher. Some of the answers might surprise you. Let's start with veggie. In American English, the noun veggie is a shortened and informal way to say vegetable. It is used as a countable noun. To make the noun plural, we add an S. My guinea pigs love to eat many kinds of veggies, including lettuce, carrots, and broccoli. Veggie can also be used as an adjective, meaning vegetarian. American English speakers often use veggie as an adjective to describe vegetarian recipes and dishes, rather than describing people as being veggies. I love making veggie tortilla chip soup with peppers, corn, and tomatoes. We are grilling up some veggie burgers made with black beans. Now let's move on to vegetarian. As a noun, a vegetarian is a person who does not eat meat or fish. They usually eat foods made from plants. There are different kinds of vegetarians. Some eat eggs. Others eat and drink dairy products, like cheese and milk. Other people are flexible in their diet. For example, they might eat vegetarian food on some days of the week and eat animal products on other days. They are called flexitarians. Adeline became a vegetarian in college. Mark is an ovo-vegetarian. He does not eat any animal products except for eggs. Vegetarian can also be an adjective describing something that only has fruit or vegetables and no meat or fish. I love Indian food, not just for the bold and spicy flavors, but there are many vegetarian choices. Let's move on to vegan. If a vegetarian does not eat fish or meat, what is a vegan? A vegan, as a noun, is someone who does not eat or use any animal products, or products made from animals. This can include things like honey from bees, whey protein from milk, and a color made from crushed insects called carmine, often used in cosmetics. She prefers agave nectar to honey because she is a vegan. Veganism is more of a lifestyle and not just what people eat. Vegans are against killing animals. They do not use any animal products for health and environmental reasons. They are also against cruelty to animals. Davey Havok, the singer of the band AFI, has been a vegan for 24 years. Just like vegetarian, vegan can be an adjective too. It describes something that was not made from animal products and that did not involve harming an animal in any way. Many bags are now made with vegan leather. Cosmetic brands are becoming vegan and cruelty-free. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Nora. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
You just heard Faith Perlow present this week's Ask a Teacher report. Welcome back, Faith.
Hi, Dan. It's great to be back on the show.
In this week's report, you answered a question about the difference between veggie, vegetarian, and vegan. You mentioned that there are different types of vegetarians. Can you tell us more about the different types? One I've heard is called a pescatarian.
You're right, Dan. One type of vegetarian is called a pescatarian. A person who is a pescatarian does not eat meat or consume dairy and eggs, but they eat fish. Fish is very nutritious and has healthy fats.
Oh, come to think of it, my dad is a pescatarian.
Another type is lacto-vegetarian. Can you guess what that is?
Lacto. That sounds familiar. Like milk?
Correct. Lacto means milk. We use it to create words that have to do with milk. So a lacto-vegetarian means someone who does not eat meat, fish, or eggs, but does eat and drink milk-based products like cheese and yogurt and cheese. Ooh, I'm getting hungry.
Me too. Time for us to grab a snack. Thanks for coming on the show today, Faith.
Thanks for having me back, Dan.
VOA VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
We present the short story, The Ransom of Red Chief, by O. Henry. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
It looked like a good thing. But wait till I tell you. We were down south in Alabama, Bill Driscoll and myself, when this kidnapping idea struck us. There was a town down there as flat as a pancake and called Summit. Bill and I had about $600. We needed just $2,000 more for an illegal land deal in Illinois. We chose for our victim the only child of an influential citizen named Ebenezer Dorset. He was a boy of 10, with red hair. Bill and I thought that Ebenezer would pay a ransom of $2,000 to get his boy back, but wait till I tell you. About 2 miles from Summit was a little mountain covered with cedar trees. There was an opening on the back of the mountain. We stored our supplies in that cave. One night, we drove a horse and carriage past old Dorset's house. The boy was in the street throwing rocks at a cat on the opposite fence. "Hey, little boy," says Bill, "would you like to have a bag of candy and a nice ride?" The boy hits Bill directly in the eye with a piece of rock. That boy put up a fight like a wild animal, but at last we got him down in the bottom of the carriage and drove away. We took him up to the cave. The boy had 2 large bird feathers stuck in his hair. He points a stick at me and says, "Ha, Paleface, do you dare to enter the camp of Red Chief, the terror of the plains?" "He's all right now," says Bill, rolling up his pants and examining wounds on his legs. "We're playing Indian. I'm old Hank, the trapper, Red Chief's captive. I'm going to be scalped at daybreak by Geronimo. That kid can kick hard." "Red Chief," says I to the boy, "would you like to go home?" "Ah, what for?" says he. "I don't have any fun at home. I hate to go to school. I like to camp out. You won't take me back home again, will you?" "Not right away," says I. "We'll stay here in the cave for a while." "All right," says he. "That'll be fine. I never had such fun in all my life." We went to bed about 11 o'clock. Just at daybreak, I was awakened by a series of terrible screams from Bill. Red Chief was sitting on Bill's chest with one hand holding his hair. In the other, he had a sharp knife. He was attempting to cut off the top of Bill's head based on what he had declared the night before. I got the knife away from the boy, but after that event, Bill's spirit was broken. He lay down, but he never closed an eye again in sleep as long as that boy was with us. "Do you think anybody will pay out money to get a little imp like that back home?" Bill asked. "Sure," I said. A boy like that is just the kind that parents love. Now, you and the chief get up and make something to eat while I go up on the top of this mountain and look around. I climb to the top of the mountain. Over toward Summit, I expected to see the men of the village searching the countryside, but all was peaceful. Perhaps, says I to myself, it has not yet been discovered that the wolves have taken the lamb from the fold. I went back down the mountain. When I got to the cave, I found Bill backed up against the side of it. He was breathing hard, with the boy threatening to strike him with a rock. He put a red-hot potato down my back, explained Bill, and then crushed it with his foot. I hit his ears. Have you got a gun with you, Sam? I took the rock away from the boy and ended the argument. I'll fix you, says the boy to Bill. No man ever yet struck the Red Chief but what he got paid for it. You better be careful. After eating, the boy takes a leather object with strings tied around it from his clothes and goes outside the cave, unwinding it. Then we heard a kind of shout. It was Red Chief holding a sling in one hand. He moved it faster and faster around his head. Just then I heard a heavy sound and a deep breath from Bill. A rock, the size of an egg, had hit him just behind his left ear. Bill fell in the fire across the frying pan of hot water for washing the dishes. I pulled him out and poured cold water on his head for half an hour. Then I went out and caught that boy and shook him. If your behavior doesn't improve, says I, I'll take you straight home. Now, are you going to be good or not? I was only funnin', says he. I didn't mean to hurt old Hank, but what did he hit me for? I'll behave if you don't send me home. I thought it best to send a letter to old man Dorset that day, demanding the ransom and telling how it should be paid. The letter said, we have your boy hidden in a place far from Summit. We demand $1,500 for his return. The money to be left at midnight tonight at the same place and in the same box as your answer. If you agree to these terms, send the answer in writing by a messenger tonight at 8:30. After crossing Owl Creek, on the road to Poplar Cove, there are three large trees. At the bottom of the fence, opposite the third tree, will be a small box. The messenger will place the answer in this box and return immediately to Summit. If you fail to agree to our demand, you will never see your boy again. If you pay the money as demanded, he will be returned to you safe and well within 3 hours. I took the letter and walked over to Poplar Cove. I then sat around the post office and store. An old man there says he hears Summit is all worried because of Ebenezer Dorset's boy having been lost or stolen. That was all I wanted to know. I mailed my letter and left. The postmaster said the mail carrier would come by in an hour to take the mail on to Summit. At 8:30, I was up in the third tree, waiting for the messenger to arrive. Exactly on time, a half-grown boy rides up the road on a bicycle. He finds the box at the foot of the fence. He puts a folded piece of paper into it and leaves, turning back toward Summit. I slid down the tree, got the note, and was back at the cave in a half hour. I opened the note and read it to Bill. This is what it said. Gentlemen, I received your letter about the ransom you ask for the return of my son. I think you're a little high in your demands. I hereby make you a counter-proposal, which I believe you will accept. You bring Johnny home and pay me $250, and I agree to take him off your hands. You had better come at night, because the neighbors believe he is lost, and I could not be responsible for what they would do to anybody they saw bringing him back. Very respectfully, Ebenezer Dorset. Great pirates of Penzance, says I, of all the nerve! But I looked at Bill and stopped. He had the most appealing look in his eyes I ever saw on the face of a dumb or talking animal. Sam, says he, what's $250 after all? We've got the money. One more night of this boy will drive me crazy. I think Mr. Dorset is making us a good offer. You aren't going to let the chance go, are you? Tell you the truth, Bill, says I. This little lamb has got on my nerves, too. We'll take him home, pay the ransom, and make our getaway. We took him home that night. We got him to go by telling him that his father had bought him a gun, and we were going to hunt bears the next day. It was 12 o'clock when we knocked on Ebenezer's front door. Bill counted out $250 into Dorset's hand. When the boy learned we were planning to leave him at home, he started to cry loudly and held himself as tight as he could to Bill's leg. His father pulled him away, slowly. How long can you hold him? Asked Bill. I'm not as strong as I used to be, says old Dorset. But I think I can promise you 10 minutes. Enough, says Bill. In 10 minutes, I shall cross the central, southern, and middle western states and be running for the Canadian border. And as dark as it was, and as fat as Bill was, and as good a runner as I am, he was a good mile and a half out of Summit before I could catch up with him.
You have heard the American story, The Ransom of Red Chief, by O. Henry. Your storyteller was Shep O'Neill. This story was adapted by Shelley Gullist. It was produced by Luan Davis.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.